The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation.
Producer Lisa?
Yeah, John?
Well, nothing big, but you're sort of in my seat.
Oh, am I? Oops. Okay, I'll get up in a sec. Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't always get its hosts back. But when we do, we aren't sure that they were better than the replacements. This is Hysteria 51. Here's your seat, sweetie.
Everyone's a critic. Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, I'm your host, John Goforth. Sitting across from me is the Bonyak to my Kuzmich, Mr. Brent Hand.
I don't even get that reference.
Obviously, you're not up on your Russian comedic duos. Okay, I guess it was a bit of a stretch.
In Russia, duels comic you. No, that didn't really work.
No, none of it worked.
But yes, it was. And if you do it again, I'm giving the mic back to Lisa. Hey, what am I saying? We're not doing that. Anyway, are you feeling any better, John? What's going on?
I'll say still in recovery, but certainly on the mend.
Damn, guess you can't win them all.
That other voice you're hearing is our robot co-host, Conspiracy Bot. C-Bot is a drunk, angry robot bent on world domination. He also enjoys crochet.
Yeah, but only really metal crochet. It calms me.
It's the strangest thing to come home from a long day and find your robot sprawled on the couch, crocheting a dragon onesie and listening to Danzig.
On the other hand, is that really all that strange with him?
You know, I guess not. Speaking of Danzig real quick, did you see that several thousand year old Greek girl that they did the reconstruction?
Yeah.
And it looks just like Glenn Danzig.
It does.
Or is it Glenn Danzig's daughter because he's eternal?
He's not.
And neither are you.
So, John, we're back talking about the man, the myth, the ladies man, the legend, the drunk monk monster man himself, old Pootie Tang, Rasputin, Rasputin.
That's right,
Brett.
Pick
your name. Pick your poison.
But before we get back into the story, I wanted to pick back up on that song that we played a little bit of in the intro last week, Rah, Rah, Rasputin. This disco delight is fire.
No.
Okay, that's a lie.
It's been an earworm for me for the last
But week. It is funny. It is really funny. Here, let's play a little bit more. Now, Brent, we'll stop the actual playback there as to avoid the remnants of the KGB coming after us. But this song has everything. Let's take a look at the lyrics.
Yeah, I hear it. The song comes out swinging. Let me read to you the first verse because I have the lyrics written out right here. There lived a certain man in Russia long ago. He was big and strong, in his eyes a flaming glow. Most people look at him with terror and fear. But the Moscow chicks, he was such a lovely dear. He could preach the Bible like a preacher, full of ecstasy and fire. But he also was the kind of teacher women would desire. Got it bad, got it bad, got it bad. I'm Hoth Pootie. Sorry, well, that's might not have been the actual part there.
I want to go back to, he could preach the Bible like a preacher, as opposed to a podiatrist.
Well, haven't you ever been to a podiatrist who's like, what is this in my foot? I don't know, but you better pray about it. You got it.
I love this song. And I mean, when you hear it in the context of the, it's like got that disco beat. And then at the very beginning of it, it's got the Russian, like, it almost sounds like, military chanting.
Yeah, like they're going to be going down a street with missiles on a truck right behind it. It goes on from there, though. He ruled the Russian land and never mind the Tsar. But the Kazachok, he danced really wunderbar. In all affairs of state, he was the man to please, but he was real great when he had a girl to squeeze. For the queen, he was no wheeler dealer, though she heard the things he'd done. She believed he was a holy healer who would heal her son.
It's funny because it's true.
I don't know if it's funny. But it is true.
Brent, this last part of the song is really confusing.
Why don't you take it?
This man's just got to go, declared his enemies. But the ladies begged, don't you try to do it, please. No doubt this Rasputin had lots of hidden charms. Though he was a brute, they fell into his arms. Then one night some men of higher standing set a trap. They're not to blame. Come to visit us, they kept demanding. And he really came. So they killed him, but they aren't to blame.
Well, they were doing what the country needed.
Best part of this song? The very, very end.
Oh
those Russians. Are they speaking in the third person? Russians.
Well, you know, I mean, it at that time, there was...
So like something we'd say. Oh, those Russians.
Oh, those Russians. It's complicated, John. I mean, you'd understand if you had two backwards R's and an upside down H in your name, but you don't, so you can't wrap your
or a pi sign.
But speaking of death that we didn't just talk about, other than in that song a little bit, let's get back into our story. Oh, those Russians!
Oh, those Russians and Rasputins. Yeah. One of them. Let's talk a little bit more about the capping off of his rise to power. As we described in the first episode, Rasputin has done pretty well for himself so far. He's gone from a wandering peasant minstrel. Okay, well, he wasn't a minstrel, I suppose, but he was at minimum a mystic. To one of the most powerful people in the court of the Tsar of Nicholas II. And if you want more on that, listen to last week's episode. But now Rasputin is in power, well, of sorts, at least influence, and he didn't do much to help the royal couple in their defense of him. There are countless stories of him being drunker than a skunk and causing trouble in pubs all around St. Petersburg, from groping women to simply pulling out his schlong and waving it around at people. He certainly wasn't a wallflower, let's say.
Yeah, he was more of half the friends we had in college.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But so they probably needed to die. I mean him, not them.
What?
Uh-oh.
That just went down a dark path.
You haven't talked to them lately, have you?
Okay. In fact, this is really interesting. He had special handlers appointed by the royal family to make sure he didn't get himself into too much trouble. And they had a naming hierarchy to establish how drunk he was in a particular evening.
like DEFCON level.
Yeah, exactly. Terms like very drunk, completely drunk, dead drunk, and overcome with drink all had very specific meanings for that particular night's escapades.
You can say that again.
You weren't there.
What do you think he was drinking?
Bot booze. So Rasputin drank bot booze. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that and the occasional bot juice. He was a man of many tastes.
All right. Now, remember the Tsarina, Alexandra, was an ardent supporter as she thought he was a true miracle worker and the only thing keeping her hemophiliac son Alexei alive. And as time went on, Rasputin's increasing drunkenness, sexual escapades, and penchant for accepting bribes to help people obtain political positions, these things were not great for his reputation.
Yeah, those things start to get noticed by the people in the court and around. And between 1906 and 1914, various politicians and journalists of the times used Rasputin's association with the imperial family to literally undermine said families and the entire dynasty's credibility and push for reform. And Rasputin helped their efforts by claiming to be the Tsarina's advisor, and accounts of his crazy antics and behavior were all over the press at that time. I mean, people were really paying notice and attention to this.
Dude liked to bang.
That's one way to put it. I think that's actually pretty true.
It didn't help matters that when reports came out that he was sleeping with the Tsarina, and we'll get into that more a little bit later, He didn't admit to them because he wasn't, but he also didn't publicly decry them. It was kind of like he liked the rumors. No. Like when you're in high school and you know, you get associated with dating a person that was, you know, out of your league, you're like, I'm not saying it's true, but I'm not saying it's true either.
Or when you ask someone, you're a virgin, aren't you? And they go, that's a personal question. Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for your answer.
The real truth is that Rasputin's influence at the time was limited to the health of Alexei.
That's very true. And this is at the time when the world was in upheaval, and we're going to be entering into World War One. And do you remember what kicked off World War One, John?
The assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
I like his band.
I do too. So that was in 1914, World War One hits. And we could spend days on this subject alone. It's one of my favorite topics. But as it relates to Rasputin, World War One is not good news.
Not so much. He was a passionate pacifist. So things like pesky world wars don't really fit in with passionate pacifists. That's hard for me to say, but I don't think it just doesn't mesh with my being passionate pacifist.
I dabbled in pacifism, dude. His anti-war stance made him an easy target for accusations of being unpatriotic.
Well, and don't forget the Tsarina was German, and that was
We didn't get into that. Nicholas married outside of Russia and married a German woman. The Tsarina was of German descent. And that's not that weird
unless you're in the middle of a world war where then you're married to a traitorous German empress.
Well, that's the way it's perceived.
Yeah.
Before that, the European bloodlines all traded around.
Right, exactly. But in during a world war, then you married this traitorous German who's sleeping with a traitorous mad monk. And all of this is going to bring the downfall of Russia.
Plus, just look at the guy. Woof.
Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof. It's from Home Alone. He was
you,
not
you
a
gave
looker.
Him, you gave him the fire stick again, didn't
I
you?
I did. Yeah. And then he installed it.
And truth be told, Rasputin didn't need to bring about the downfall of Russia because Nicholas II was doing a fine job of that on his own.
Yeah, little Nicky was making some bad decisions.
He had already lost a major war with the Japanese earlier in the century, the Russo-Japanese War. He made a bunch of bad decisions and they lost.
Who only sends men named Russo against an entire fucking country? What a horrible decision.
I'm just going to leave that alone. I do want to know why we decide to, when we look back on history, why we use these terms differently. Like for other Japanese wars, it was Nipponese or Nippon. And for this, instead of being the Russian Japanese, it was the Russo Japanese. Like, I don't know why we select, I'm sure there's an easy answer. I didn't look it up. Anyway, speaking of Nicholas II being bad, millions of Russians died during World War One for one reason or another.
Holy shit. The World Wars really decimated. In World War II, 23 million Russians died. That is just a staggering, staggering number.
Well, and that's the thing about Russia and wars. They're not very good at them, but they have more people than you.
When you're like a third of the planet in your ground space, not really, but it's big. You got bodies. I don't know if we should
it's
say
like those
you're not
people,
good at it because chances are they're listening to this and they might take offense
it's categorical.
Our president's going to be tweeting about us.
It's true. It's categorical. I mean, you can't lose millions upon, I forget the exact number, but in the first month of battle, Russia lost an insane number of troops. You can't lose that many troops and be good at it. But when you have so many more that you can just throw at it, you eventually win. But it's kind of like those people you knew in high school that weren't all that smart, but just beat you because they had more effort than you. Like, you want to get out of bed? Nah.
Yeah.
They're already up and working at it at 4 a.m. Yeah. They might not be all that smart, but they have
I'm
more
dumb,
effort.
I'm dumb, but I'm motivated.
Now, I'm not saying Russians are dumb, but I am saying that they weren't good at war.
But the things that you're talking about, though, it's easier to blame someone else than yourselves. So it didn't stop these upper echelons of power back in St. Petersburg. Guess what? They need a scapegoat. It's going to be Rasputin, and they decided that he needed to die because it's easier to blame him than all of their own inadequacies.
And there were one or two people that really kind of helped lead that charge. And we'll take a look at them when we come back next.
I didn't know you guys were going to talk about me. This is amazing.
I don't know why. He really must like this guy.
We ran around in some of the same circles.
Oh, that and Les Sebott next on Hysteria 51.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so it's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know? If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long term stuff like this, and this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get now. Started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today.
Pootie, order up.
Not going to let that one go, are you?
Pootie.
All right. So, Brent, you cannot talk about Rasputin without talking about his, let's call him frenemy, Sergei Trufanov. He's much more widely referred to as Hero Monk Iliador, or just Iliador.
Iliador. He's a priest in the Russian Orthodox Church, and initially was friends with Rasputin. However, much like many friendships, that didn't last.
Wait, what are you implying there,
No,
Brent?
I just, you hear about that in history. E tu, Brute? You know, first, they were pretty far apart ideologically.
Yeah.
They didn't see it either.
Iliador hated the free access that Rasputin had to the Tsar and Tsarina. Frankly, it kind of sounds like he was just jealous.
Right. It sounds like he, when you get into the upper echelons of society, especially back in there, there is a lot of infighting and backstabbing because appearances of power are as important as power itself.
It's like the Real Housewives of St. Petersburg.
Right.
Listen, you biznache.
Yeah.
No, how would they say it? How would you say bitch?
Listen, you biznache. I don't even know. Also, not to be outdone, because he's such a fun guy, he's also a radical conservative anti-Semite.
Yeah, so, he was.
Radical anything is bad.
Yeah, and usually. And very
unless you're just radical.
Very anti-Semitic, very loud and open about it. Rasputin, on the other hand, frequently talked about his Jewish brothers and sisters, quote-unquote, lovingly, and was even friends with the gay community. That we mentioned that before. Listen, this
not so much over there these days. Do they refer to him that way? Unfortunately,
and the point being, I listen. We weren't there. I don't know how members of the gay community were treated by the general public at large, but I know that it was frowned upon by a lot of the leaders of by various faith leaders. Very similar to the world today, but Rasputin was a loud and outspoken supporter of the gay community.
Of course, Ilyodor didn't like this and took it upon himself to see Rasputin removed. That was his goal. He became a part of a group of establishment figures who had attempted to drive a wedge between the royal family and Rasputin. That was back in 1911. And he started a slander and blackmail campaign against Rasputin, hinting that the Tsarina Alexandra and him were lovers. So yeah. That's where that comes from.
So he went so far as to acquire, and by acquire we likely mean steal, letters by the Tsarina and her daughters, and then give them to the Tsar. And here's the thing about these letters. If you go read them, you can find them online. Out of context, they sound a bit personal. They some of the verbiage is like, "Oh my great and true leader." Leader's not even the word, but like she sounds so in so much admiration of Rasputin that it sounds like
in likelihood it was admiration because he had saved her son,
right? But not because they were banging. Anyways, but again, out of context, they didn't sound great. So he gave them to the Tsar and the Tsar was not happy. Now, scholars believe it's not that he actually thought that the two were having sexual escapades together, but more along the lines of like, why would you expose the family like this? Kind of like the right. Mafia style, you know?
Like how could you allow a breach?
Yes, yes, yes. And actually for a time he banished, if you want to call it that, Rasputin back to his hometown, back to Siberia. Right. Go back to Siberia.
Fuck, I gotta go see my wife and kids. Jeez.
Worst punishment in the world.
Right. It's like when Al Bundy dies and goes to hell. I don't know if you saw that no. episode. He's in hell and he's like, so what's my punishment? He's like, all right, the only thing you can eat for eternity is, and I forget what they call them, like cheesy tots. And they're like little like cheese covered corn dogs. He's like, I love cheesy tots. He's like, how? All they do is make you sit in the bathroom for eternity. Why do you think I eat them? And like every punishment he takes up, he's like, oh, thank you. Thank you. So finally his punishment is he kills the rest of the family and the Darcys, and he has to live with them in hell for eternity, which is just his life.
Kids, you know how Brent spends his off hours watching reruns of Married with Children.
Bolkai, number 33.
The final word on this, most scholars agree that there were no sexual escapades between the Tsarina and Rasputin.
Right. Then in 1914, there was an assassination attempt on Rasputin. This is a weird one.
This is really weird.
A 33-year-old peasant woman named Chayona Guseva, I believe is how you say it, stabbed old Rassi, we're switching it up there, in the stomach outside of his home. He was actually hurt pretty severely. And for a time, people actually thought he wouldn't live. And after surgery, though, and some R&R, he did recover. And it's also worth noting, though, that for a time he had renounced alcohol. But after this episode, he lived in constant pain. And they think that's what drove him back to drinking.
Yeah.
Because of this stabbing incident.
We mentioned before that while he was a lecherous drunk, there were moments of teetotaling, and he had gone through a moment of teetotaling, but then went back to the drink after he was stabbed. A few things about our attempted assassin, Miss Guseva.
Can I just throw in, she's a looker.
She is. She was missing a nose, literally.
Yeah, she was like Dan Aykroyd in Nothing But Trouble when they go into his room and he's taking that penis nose off.
Yeah, yeah. She also enjoyed a lot of bratwurst.
Well,
or knockwurst, whatever knockwurst, he was eating.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but she was missing a nose, and many folks attribute that to alleged syphilis.
No, because she was asked, and she said, nope, don't got it.
So we know she didn't have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
She said that she was, quote, damaged by medicines, unquote, since she was 13. So obviously that tells me she had a coke problem.
Well, she had ghosts in her blood. So also, after a standing trial, she was found not guilty by reason of insanity and placed in an asylum until 1917. She went on to raise a family and live a prosperous life. No, I'm actually hearing that's not right.
That is not right. It's actually reported that she attempted and failed another assassination attempt, this time on Patriarch Tikhon of Moscow in 1919.
Oh, and the best part we didn't mention, she was a follower of, who was it now?
Iliador.
That's right. So who would have thought? And she literally stabbed him, she said, because she didn't like his... his religious teachings, Rasputin's.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
she did it because...
According to both her and Iliador, they both swore that Iliador had nothing to do with this assassination attempt, that she was on her own. But at the while they said that, after the attempt, Iliador was like, well, people are going to think I did it, so that's why I'm going to flee. He fled to Norway. In fleeing, he also shaved his beard, dressed in drag.
Hey, when in Rome. You know, when in Norway.
When in Norway. And then here's the weird part. Like, the dressed in drag, he would say, like, so he wasn't noticed or wasn't, you know, recognized. But then after he fled, he was interviewed and photographed in drag for a newspaper article. We could do an hour on Iliador. He was a unique individual.
Yeah.
And the story of Iliador ends, this is crazy, in New York City, where he spent the rest of his years with his family, converting to become a Baptist and working as a janitor at the Metropolitan Life Insurance Tower.
That is a fucking crazy juxtaposition of life.
No kidding.
Wow. I don't even have a joke there. I'm being serious. Like, I don't even. Yeah.
A hero monk in the court of the last of the Romanovs to janitor at a big building in New York in the early 20th century. That's crazy.
But just because this whole failed assassination on Pootie happened, his days. Now, I'm saying failed because it didn't kill him. His days were still numbered. Or were they? Well, that's the, we'll get into that. But that's the alleged assassination on Rasputin. That's next. What really happened or didn't, because there's a lot of legend in that, when he died or didn't die on Hysteria 51.
Does he die if he's always in our hearts? So Brent, let's recap where we are in Rasputin's wanderings, his comings and goings. He starts as a peasant boy from a Siberian farm.
He was a horse toucher.
Yeah, he was a horse toucher. He makes his way up in the world through one way or another into the court of Nicholas II.
That's a hell of a step.
It is. It is. And he has no real experience to even warrant him being there. The one thing he's done is he's been able to heal their son numerous times. And that healing, for the record, is the one thing that no one to this day can truly explain.
Right.
In last episode, we gave you a few examples of what might have happened, but there is no conclusive proof as to how he would heal Alexei.
Well, and the thing is that scholars do agree on is that when they would ask him to leave, he would just stare at them until they'd finally be like, oh, fuck, okay, stop looking at me and you can stay because your eyes are fucked up.
Yeah, well, his eyes would actually turn into those circles that go in on themselves, like in a cartoon, like, to, you know, like when Bugs Bunny's eyes would get hypnotized.
Into my eye.
Yeah. So
that's mine taken, baby. Sorry, Harvey Birdman.
And the Tsarina wants to is a huge supporter of his because of what he can do for their son, and always wants to defend him. He doesn't make it easy. He's a drunk. He's going around grabbing women.
Oh, and he's got a Mondo dong. We already said that too.
Yeah, we did say that as well. The problem is that the aristocracy, if you will, of early 20th century Russia, he just doesn't fit. He is a square peg in a round hole. That he doesn't conform to what they their beliefs. He also doesn't conform to their behavior. And so eventually it's decided by numerous people, this guy's got to go.
So the thing about that is, though, if he hadn't been protected by them, he probably would have been killed in a bar years ago.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You know, they probably afforded him a longer life than he would have had because this dude was just out there.
Yeah, he was out there, and he also, but they also hated how much power or influence they thought he had over the royal couple. Once World War I started, there were numerous articles in Russian papers about, and cartoons, you would see Rasputin pulling the puppeteer strings of the Tsar and the Tsarina. Basically, they were alleging that we were in, that we, that Russia was in World War I because of Rasputin, even though he was a pacifist.
Right. And you, like you said, these people came, these nobles and politicians came together and decided they were going to come up with this death. They were going to kill him. And that's not new. He'd already had an attempt on his life, but he had recovered. And the leaders of this new plot to kill him were Prince Felix Yusupov and the Grand Duke Dmitry Pavlovich. And that's not Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
But, it is not.
But Grand Duke. And how do you do it? How do you kill a man like this? A drunken party.
You have to appeal to his sensibilities.
Yeah.
Hey, we're gonna have lots of cake. We're gonna have lots of wine, and then we're gonna have more wine, and then some more wine after that. Hey, I'll be there.
Yeah. Right. So here's what we know. We know he died of 3 gunshot wounds, one of which was a close range shot to his forehead. Beyond that, little is certain about his death, and the circumstances of his death have been subject of considerable speculation, story, lies, truths, who knows.
Right.
The story goes that they decided to poison him, so they laced...
So they're going to throw this big party. Yeah. They're going to throw this big party. They're going to have everyone at the party is in on it, except for him.
Right. So they laced his food, they said, and tea with cyanide.
Cakes specifically.
Yeah. And enough cyanide, they said, to kill several people. And the story goes, the dude just ate and drank with literally zero signs of it even bothering him. Then he turns to wine. He goes, hey, go get me some wine. They go, of course. So they dump even more poison in some wine. Nothing.
So first, maybe the cyanide wasn't good. Mm-hmm. Whoever they got it from, it sold them bad cyanide. There's also speculation that the sugars in the cake neutralized the poison. No one knows for sure, but they had enough cyanide to kill a small army. And he's like, "Hey, we party, right?"
So what do? You go and get a gun, and Yusupov shot him in the chest. Now you think dead, right? So they start to stage the scene, but the dude, they say, jumps up and attacks Yusupov, and he gets away and cheeses it out of there. He runs.
He's dead. He's lying there dead, eyes open, a glaze, and they're like, okay, fine. So they start to set up like a scene from Clue, like, you know, it was Colonel Mustard in the library.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he comes roaring back, "You do not kill me." and he starts attacking them. And then after that, he runs out.
They think, well, we can't have this. Perushkovich, I think is how you say it, he shoots him again. And he collapses, as you do when you're shot, usually.
Okay, so at some point in there, he's also stabbed and beaten. And then...
Yeah, they just start beating the shit out of
him. Yeah, just because they're like scared at this point. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh my God, this guy really has superpowers. And then, according to legend, the second shot didn't actually kill him. He's still alive and starts to get up again in the courtyard. That's when the third and magical shot to the forehead... wipes him out, or maybe not.
Well, there's a bridge right there, so here we've got a dude shot in the head. He's dead, of course.
So they wrap up the body and they take him to the bridge.
And they say they throw him into this icy river, and as soon as it hits the water, he wakes back up and is screaming at them like, "You motherfuckers!"
Well, so a few things on this. It's the craziest thing. They say they tied his hands up and they threw him in, and that when the body was recovered, his hands were untied. And that they were frozen as if he was doing the
meringue.
Catholic, the meringue, yes. what the Catholic cross, what is that what it's called?
Spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, according to coroner reports later, none of that's true.
Right.
Like,
right.
He was probably actually dead when they put the bullet in his
head. So there's a very different coroner story. Again, this is one of many stories. This story that we just told you is actually the version from Yusupovin's memoirs. He wrote that
himself,
this is what happened.
Right.
So you started to speak on this. I think let's just jump to issues with this story. He was shot at close range in the head. If you're shot at close range in the head like that, that was a kill shot, period. There were, though, zero signs of cyanide in his body.
Yeah, that's
whatsoever.
For real. Right.
They test toxicology reports, zero signs that he was poisoned. Also, there was no proof that the British Secret Service are the ones who killed him, like a lot of people want to imply. There's also no proof that he was beaten. They said that there were abrasions on his body, but they felt that they probably came from in the water as he hit things in the water. Those were the only abrasions on his body.
You mentioned the British Secret Service agent. There's allegedly a British Secret Service agent who was involved in his assassination, who was actually the puppeteer behind that. Mm-hmm. Those stories aside, the truth always, I think, lies somewhere in the middle. I bet you it wasn't dramatic as we described. Mm-hmm. It was probably a lot more like the poison didn't work, so we went ahead and shot him.
Yeah, we shot him. Yeah, it probably wasn't even poison. Probably someone sold him some sugar or something stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's poison, eh?
I believe that they probably thought they were poisoning him,
right.
And it just wasn't really poison. And they probably didn't beat him because they were probably like, let's get him out of here as soon as we fucking can. And they'd already set up that we were going to throw him into the water.
And maybe the first shot didn't kill him. Like, a lot of people don't die after the first shot.
Right.
Correct.
But they said, though, that he was dead by the time he hit the water. The coroner report said that it was definitely a killing shot. And
because there was no water in his lungs.
Yeah, exactly.
If he had been still alive, he would have taken in water. Yeah.
So he was buried on the 2nd of January, 1917. And get this, after all that time, the funeral was attended only by one person of the royal family and a few of their close friends. And get this shit, Rasputin's wife, all of his mistresses, and his children were not invited. No,
well, I mean, I'm surprised you couldn't either. You, in that situation, you do one or the other. If you're throwing a funeral for somebody, you either invite the wife or you invite the mistresses. You can't invite both.
Then his body was exhumed and buried by a detachment of soldiers shortly after the Tsar abdicated the throne. Now he did. That's another story for another day. But he abdicated the throne in March of 1917 in order to prevent his burial site from becoming a rally point for supporters of the old regime. So
yeah,
out with the old, in with the new.
There were plenty of pro-Rasputin folks as well.
So it's kind of an interesting thing there because, yeah, there were, and not just him, but pro-Tsar Nicholas and the family. Now, we know that that didn't end very well for them either.
No,
that's
a good point.
Was killed.
That's a good point. He would have been a touchstone for the pro aristocracy folks because
right.
They were such big supporters of Rasputin.
You've got, on one hand, dead dude that was murdered. It's an entire comedy of errors because really looking at it through this lens, he really didn't have any of the power that he thought he had, but he was an easy person to blame.
So Brent, we've talked about the rise and fall of a mystic beast. We've talked about the beginning of World War One, the death of millions. Now let's talk about the most important part of this whole story. His schlong.
Dick, 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 dick.
How many dicks is that, John?
That's a lot of dicks.
Yeah. Want to see it?
Yes!
Well, you maybe can. We don't know for sure. But big surprise there. I say that. There's conjecture in that, too, because there's conjecture in anything. No one knows if it's true or not, but his dick is purportedly on display. The first time.
All the jokes that we've made along the way. I don't know if we ever came out and said, you probably surmised this, it is reported that he had an enormous penis.
Yeah.
And
literally, here's what's sad. His daughter is quoted as saying that when he was erect, it was 13 inches.
Too much. TMI.
Got to tell him.
No. I'm saying from her. Like,
why would she know? Because it was written on the bathroom wall. You know.
For a good time, dial 7.
Yeah.
They have phones, but you just dial the joke.
Dial 7, party 4, line. It ring 4 time, I answer. Like, they all had their own ringers, party lines and shit.
So it was purported that he had this massive phallus. It was also purported that it was cut off of him after death.
How? Well, some say that he was castrated by his assassins, and that a maid is cleaning up an oop little pootie on the floor, and she just takes it. Others claim that a winch cut it off as a souvenir after the autopsy.
It wasn't like this was done as he was alive, like as a torture thing or anything like that. This is all post-mortem.
So fast forward a bit, and Michael Augustine of California, he claimed that he acquired the goods by accident when he purchased all the effects of one doctor, this Dr. Ripple, in 1977. So
didn't I used to drink Dr. Ripple?
Right. Dr. Ripple had collaborated with Marie Rasputin on a hagiography, not a biography, not an autobiography, a hagiography of her father, and so had inherited his dick in a jar when she died. Or had she? Well, after Michael Augustine sold the item in question to the Bonhams Auction House, tests were done, and this would-be winky, that's a quote right
there.
That's
a technical term. That's a technical term.
Turned out to not be a penis at all, a desiccated sea cucumber.
Well, it's pretty flattering that somebody could look at a sea cucumber and go, yep, that's a schlong.
Right? Not to be confused with one of way back when our first sponsors, Dick at Your Door, where they would send you a dick at your door, but it was chocolate.
Pay me. We get a quarter for that, right?
Right.
But have no fear. We have Russian Dr. Igor Anazkin, head physician of the Prostate Center of Russia's Academy of Sciences.
That is a prestigious place, man.
There's a waiting list. Let's just say that. He opened the Museum of Erotica in 2004 inside of a sexual health clinic in order to display some of the 15,000 items he had amassed during his time as a sex objects collector. Now, Brent, you mentioned before that you want to be known as a wandering sex machine. Would you also like to be known as a sex objects collector? Because I think that's more likely.
No, I just want to collect the memories.
Okay. Amongst
I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. Memories.
Amongst those 15,000 items was the alleged appendage itself.
So this thing is floating in a jar, and its non-erect self is 11 inches, or if you're on that side of the pond, 30 centimeters, and is as thick, they say, as most men's wrists. You don't believe us? Google it. You can Google it yourselves. Now, here's the problem with this one. No tests have been done on this one to prove if it is really, well, even human.
Pooties?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Most people believe it to be a horse's.
Or some other.
Large mammal.
Yeah.
But that's the story.
That would be a small horse, though, for real. Like it'd been like a colt or whatever it would be, not like a full size horse, because that would be the size of your leg.
Did you reference your full book and list of mammal testicles and
I did.
Phalluses?
You really want to see my search history on this week's research? Yeah.
Why do I feel like if I went and I found all these things in your search history, I'd be like, oh, that makes sense. He was working on the outline, November 2017.
I knew we were going to get to this one.
Eventually.
I think we can sum it up, though. The moral of the story is the company you keep reflects on you. It really does. And that reflected on the czars, it reflected on him. And it doesn't need to be true. People's perception is the truth.
So here's the question. I suppose the one question that we could ask is whether it be from his alleged indestructibility to his ability to heal horses, and then of course his known ability to heal Alexei. Do you believe he had supernatural powers?
No, I don't. I think he probably had some sort of knowledge of backwoods medicine. I think people are calming, and I think faith in someone is also can be a very healing thing.
I think I use the term psychosomatic.
Yeah, you know, I think that's important, and it is one of those things that can cure or cause a lot of issues for people. I think this is one of those stories that the legend is better than the true story, but the true story is pretty crazy too. We just don't know where those two overlap and don't, and what's true and what's not.
I just don't understand how people drink like 12 bottles of Madeira wine in a night and like do it every night
and live
and like not only live, but like actually go out and do their day job.
You know, there are some people that don't get hungover. Their body doesn't metastasize that,
Joe Peck,
the acid or whatever.
Joe Peck
it is.
Doesn't.
He doesn't.
No.
Yeah. You know, and they're just like, I don't know what a hangover is. That's crazy.
I hate those people.
Which would also be bad because then you would have no repercussions. So you.
Yeah, that's true. Here are my parting thoughts on Rasputin. I definitely think that the assassination is a blown up story. You know,
right?
I definitely think that.
Why wouldn't you just bring him in a room and shoot the motherfucker?
I don't know. I guess they were trying to make it look like an accident because what they wanted the river to carry his body out and never to be found,
right?
And so no one knew that he was actually murdered.
Rivers always fuck you.
Yeah, they do. They do. I mean, rivers. Who needs them?
Amen, brothers.
I think all the stuff from his childhood and all of the lore is just legend that's grown over time. The one thing that is really interesting about this story to me is the Alexei stuff. Medicine was bad back then, and the kid kept getting better.
Yeah.
And it kept coinciding with his mm-hmm. With his treatment. And like you said, I don't know if he necessarily had magic hands, but you know, maybe some backwoods medicine, maybe just the true belief.
Maybe a mixture thereof. Yeah. Here's the next question I have for you. What's your over-under on the penis really being his in the jar?
No way it's his.
I don't think there's any way, shape, or form.
It just pops back up. No pun intended. Hey, you want to sit on my lap and talk about whatever pops up? Hey.
Yeah, it's just, it's, hey, you know, it's part of the story.
Yeah.
You can go take,
Nation,
you can literally put your head next to it and take a photo.
Or not. Nation, we want to know what you think. What do you think about Rasputin? What do you think about the legend, his aura, his sexual promiscuity, his supernatural abilities, and his schlong?
We don't need to hear about his aura because we already know it's indigo.
That's true. You can let us know in Hysteria Nation. That's our Facebook discussion group. Just go to facebook.com/Hysteria Nation.
That's right. Also, facebook.com/Hysteria51 Pod. That's our normal Facebook page. Tweet to us at Hysteria51 Pod. Patreon, patreon.com/Hysteria51. Voicemail, 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277.
We have some catch-up work to do there.
Yeah, we do.
Should we listen to a couple?
John, I think so. Let's get going. Are you ready?
I am so excited.
Let me dig into the coffers here. Find out where we've got a voicemail at. Here we go.
Yo, what up, man? Just want to say I love your show. You guys are hilarious, and C-Bot is the best, man. You guys should give him more respect. All right, brothers, my Instagram is LeoChavez099, and I love you guys. See you later.
Do you ever watch The Good Place?
No.
That dude sounds like, I think it's Jason on The Good Place.
LeoChavez099.
Yeah. Ooh.
Thanks for calling.
99.
I don't know about the love for C-Bot, but we appreciate it nonetheless.
No one's perfect.
Shut your whore mouths.
Yeah, hey guys. My name is Eric. I listen to you guys all the time. I'm in the car with work and love it. Love the show. Recently listened to the Great Pyramids episode, and I thought that the quote from Ben Carson was hilarious. And what it immediately made me think of was Civilization 3, being the giant nerd that I am. Yeah, and that Sid, when you build the Great Pyramids, you get a granary in every city on that continent. Well, I did a little digging, and I found out one. Well, Ben Carson, as we know, is from Detroit. Well, he went back to school at the University of Michigan starting in 1973. Why do I bring that up? Well, Sid Meier himself graduated from the University of Michigan in 1975. So is there some sort of crosstalk going on about alternative histories to our great monuments? I don't know. I thought that was fascinating, so I figured I'd share it. I don't have social media, so you can't shout me out, but I appreciate your time. Hope you guys have a great day.
Eric, doing some deep digging on that.
Great call. So there was like literally one bullshit class where like this hippie comes along and is like, hey, you know, man, I'll teach a class about, you know, about, it's an alternative history. Yeah, man, they put grain and shit in the pyramids.
And Ben Carson's like, I believe him, yo. I don't know why, but I do.
And Sid Meier's like, that's hilarious. I'm just going to add it to my game.
Let's do one more.
Hi, guys. My name is Luna B. I'm from North Hollywood, California.
No problem.
I just want to tell you guys that I really love the show. I grew up watching all those 90s and early 2000s paranormal
nice.
And mystery shows like Ancient Aliens and A Haunting and Is It Real? And you guys really bring the same vibes and I love it, except you guys also seem like people I would totally chill with. You quote C-Lab and Tim and Eric, and you guys just seem like pals. So keep doing what you're doing. I really love it. You guys are awesome. And C-Bot, you're awesome, too.
Oh,
remember me,
Lord,
when robots take over. Remember, I love you. And don't kill me, please.
And I lost respect for her.
Bye, guys.
Great job.
She was bubbly.
I do think that I'm someone to chill with. You, I disagree.
I'm awesome to chill with.
You have no chill.
I'm awesome to heat with.
You have no chill.
Dude, you'd have no. I'm, ask my wife. I'm awesome. Mm. And if she tells
actually,
you otherwise,
I will
she's
ask her.
A goddamn liar.
Well, Nation, thanks for calling in. We will try to play more of those as they come in.
Yes, we certainly will. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you so much for waiting, because I wanted to wait until John got back before we delve back into him. And we have quite the back catalog to start chugging through. But like I said, if you forget any of these things, just go to hysteria51.com. Do us a favor. Tell a friend about the show. Ask the friend. And also, if you want to help us out, review us. iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere. Give us a review. We'd love 5 stars, but we'll take whatever. We really would love it if you gave us a review, because it helps us feel better about ourselves, and that's all that matters.
He's exactly right, except for one thing, Brent. You misspoke on one thing. It has to be 5 stars. You can say whatever you want about us. Call Brent an ugly pigeon. We've been down that path, but it has to be 5 stars.
We have been down that path.
Well, Brent, I'm exhausted. Well, Rasputin did me in.
Rasputin did us in. Real quick, if you want to hear us on Mondays, KGRARadio.com, 9-8 Central. You can hear us on there every week, KGRARadio.com. We're going to take a nap, not together, because John's got to leave my house. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a 4th Hand Shine.